Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Friday. Melissa's been kind enough. I'm joining you all from my mobile office, aka the minivan. So she has been kind enough to put the PowerPoint slides there. They're just to guide our conversation today. So I'm toggling through the phone. So I apologize if I look a little rusty here. Just as a reminder to everybody, we love the chat, and Amy and Lori are going to really want you to be chatty today. So put your questions. Don't hesitate. As always, I've provided some questions to guide our conversation, but we really do want to hear from you all. So Amy and Lori, I can monitor the chat and I'll kind of weave it in, to our conversation today. So Melissa, if you want to kind of click through the next slide or two, we do have information about how you can share this podcast and our other podcasts with colleagues who maybe couldn't be with us today. And then if you'll click to our next slide, we are so fortunate to have with us, and Amy and Lori, I had to take your bios this morning and really, we could have like multiple slides about all the work that Amy and Lori have done, but we are so thrilled to be joined by Amy Baldwin and Lori Hazard, who are truly both experts in this world of student success and first year experience in particular. And so today, this whole conversation came out of, I have a dual enrollment, a child in a dual enrollment program. And a couple of months ago, he and I were having this conversation about how do you stay motivated in school, right? Like, he definitely hits that slump in February that I think a lot of us do, like mid-February, where it's like, it's gray outside, it's dark at 5 o'clock or 4:30, and I'm just not feeling motivated. Unfortunately, he has his mother. It's me, right? So I'm like, oh no, we're not going to do that. We get to stay motivated. But then Amy and Lori, and I, we need to make sure we throw this into the chat, are doing a fantastic series of videos geared for parents on kind of how to help your college-age student to be successful, addressing things like what one was that you just posted recently, like was when things don't go as I want them to go, right? When I have disappointment. And they posted, literally, my son Will and I are having this conversation, like the next day, it's like Amy and Lori have heard me, and they post about motivation. And I was like, oh, we're going to have this conversation in a more meaningful way. So we have prepared, like I said, about five or six questions for Amy and Lori today, but put in the chat your questions for them, because we're here to discuss, you know, motivation and how to support our students, whether they're your students in your classroom, or the students who might live with you at your house, or the students you interact with in your offices. So, Melissa, do you mind switching to our slide with all of our questions? Fantastic. All right. So we're going to kick it off, Amy and Lori, with just kind of the beginning question of kind of what is motivation, and what are sort of the psychological underpinnings? Because I think that really helps us to frame the whole conversation.
All right. Well, I'll kick it off here. So I'm just going to give you the definition of motivation, which is the direction and intensity of somebody's efforts. So it's what people are going to aim their energies, what direction they're going to aim their energies in, and the intensity, how much effort are they going to expend? So there are lots of different theories of motivation, but I think one that will resonate with the college population is the attributional theory of achievement motivation. And that really looks at the idea of whether motivation is coming from inside, internal, or whether it's coming from outside, external. And so when we think of internal, that comes from the individual, we're thinking of their ability and effort. When we're thinking of external, we're thinking maybe about luck and task difficulty, things that are external to the human. So if you think about when a student is faced with a challenge or they're giving an assignment that they have to master, a lot of times humans will go through this reflection, right? So they'll think about my individual ability. I was just given this assignment. Do I feel confident in my individual ability to master this assignment? They'll think about whether they feel like doing it, the effort they're willing to expend on it, right? Whether they're interested in it, whether they want to do it. So that effort that they're willing to expend, right? Then they'll think about the task difficulty. Is this easy for me or is this hard for me? And then, with any luck, am I going to get this done? So there are sort of with that attributional theory of achievement motivation, if we think about how students might go through that reflection. I also like, and I'm going to throw this out here because I think this is a great TED talk to show in your first year experience class. It's Dan Pink, The Puzzle of Motivation. And he talks about motivation over these three areas, autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And I put that into an acronym called AMP, right? So when we're motivated, we're amped up to do something. And so he really talks about how external motivators really don't function to get people excited and motivated. They have to come from the individual. So when we think in terms of autonomy, mastery, and purpose, autonomy is when people have choice over what they want to do, they're more motivated, right? But in a college environment, that doesn't always work. So I would tell instructors, is there a way that they can create autonomy with assignments, that if they have a goal, can they give students choice over two or three assignments, right? Mm-hmm. Mastery is, are you providing with everything that the student needs in order to master the assignment? And what's the purpose of the assignment? So I do like that acronym of AMP. To get students to think about motivation. So that's kind of like the definition of motivation, right? The direction and intensity of one's efforts. One theory of motivation, the attributional theory of achievement motivation. And I'll throw in the modern spin on it with Dan Pink's AMP, autonomy, mastery, and purpose.
So really recommending. And how long is this Dan Pink video?
I think I'm trying to remember, maybe 12 minutes. It's not too long, but it's good. Yeah. And I think I've used it in a first year experience class and it really resonates with students.
So can I jump in, Meg, and just kind of add my spin? First of all, let me just say that Lori has been my unpaid therapist this year, because she has been helping me through what's going on in the classroom in terms of motivation or lack thereof. So if you are listening to this, and you have been struggling with how to connect with students and get them motivated, or they've been telling you, I'm just not motivated. Lori may charge you if you reach out to her now, but she's been really helping me kind of rethink some things. So I'm really appreciative of that. But I wanted to just share one piece of this. And Lori, you can put your therapist hat on or your psychological hat on about this. I'm seeing a lot of students really, because they don't have that external motivation set up, that they don't have those skills yet, that they are asking for internal motivators. I'm sorry, just flip that. They don't have the internal motivators kind of set up and built in yet, especially coming out of perhaps situations that, COVID kind of exacerbated some issues, that they're asking for some external motivators. So I have students actually asking for quizzes, because they know that if they have a quiz, they're going to have to do the thing. And I'm just curious if you have seen that as well. Yes, ideally we want them to go internal and that it's going to take time, but just especially those people out there that are working with first year students in particular, what are your thoughts about helping them with some external motivators, at least initially?
I think from a developmental psychology perspective, if you think about what motivates somebody through the lifespan and how you handle disciplining somebody in the childhood stage of development and then the late childhood stage and then into adolescence, a lot of parents will use reward systems when somebody's in elementary school or junior high, external reward systems. We tend to respond to it those particular developmental stages, and that begins to shift when we become adolescents and emergent adults. And you hope that the motivation shifts to internal at that age and stage. But probably what you're seeing is some developmental lag, I'm guessing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay if students are asking for that and they need that structure. Mm-hmm. to help keep them motivated. I think it's okay for you to create systems that hold them accountable, and I would go ahead and do it. And at some point they will make that developmental shift. And what provides that shift is when they find purpose, right? And we don't often find that until we're in the identity stage of development and we're exploring what's our purpose.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because I just think that I want to give people permission to say, you know, there could be times where you need to put those things out there for them to help them with the motivation to do things. And it's okay to talk about it. Say, look, every week we have a quiz. Every Friday you have an assignment due, and I'm helping you build practice towards, hopefully then, you know, you're motivating yourself, you know, after this semester kind of thing. So Meg, I know this kind of leads into talking about mindset in particular, and I kind of wanted to just jump in there if that's okay.
Absolutely. Real quick, I think you're bringing up such a good point that this is something you've noticed. It's something Laurie's noticed. Clearly there are people listening, and like, I just don't want people to feel alone, right? Yeah. I think I've worked with so many colleagues who are like, whoa, is it just me? What am I doing that my students don't seem motivated to? And so I do think it's important to acknowledge there are things shifting. I mean, we're talking a lot, the three of us, about, you know, kids coming out of K-12. It's going to take years for us to process learning loss and I think developmental delay. So I think that's, yeah, I just want to normalize kind of the conversation we're having. Yeah. But good spot to jump into growth line.
So I want to kind of bounce off of what Lori said about the AMP, autonomy, mastery, and purpose. The mastery part, just again, I'm going to try to keep it real because I've been struggling all year, more so in the fall. This spring, I feel like I'm finally figuring out some better things that work for my students. But if they don't believe that they can learn and grow and change, they're not going to make those moves towards mastery. If they fundamentally have a belief system that they're not good at something, I work primarily with students who will tell me, and test scores often reflect this, that they just didn't get what they needed in high school, or they didn't perform in the way that they should have in high school to prepare them for college. And so a lot of them have these residual feelings and emotions and habits where they just kind of shut down and they don't do the work because it's too challenging. They don't feel that they have that the confidence, as Lori was saying, or that self-efficacy to do it. And some of that is related to their mindset and their belief system about their ability to learn. And just, I'll be really, really brief, because I think a lot of people are very familiar with growth mindset and fixed mindset. But that fixed mindset is about proving their abilities and mastery, whereas growth mindset is more focused on improving. So if you have a student that is very focused on the grade, very focused on what do I have to do to make an A, or I'm just not good at this, so I'm not going to do that thing, that is very much tied into that proving themselves either, you know, that they have some inborn talent, which we know is not completely 100% true. You can improve, can grow, versus what do I need to do to learn and master this? And again, kind of talking about that internal and external motivation shift for students, I see sometimes first year students not adopting that growth mindset in a lot of ways, unless it's something very comfortable for them and they have proven in the past that they can do it. And so helping students kind of understand that it's about how they look at the situation, how they look at the course, how they look at the assignment that can dictate their, you know, how motivated they might be to do it. And so just being aware of that, I think is really, really helpful. And then Lori and I were talking before, we had a meeting before the meeting, you know, the pre-meeting about some of these things. And it's, to me, it's about self-talk, right? How do we get students to stop talking about how they're not good at something, or they just want to get something done and they're not really interested in learning? And how can we make that shift to that growth mindset, those principles of I'm going to try this and I'm going to learn from it, or I haven't mastered it yet, or if I fail at this, it's going to teach me what I need to know to be successful the next time.
And I always, I'm a big fan of taking a psychoeducational approach with students when I'm introducing these concepts. And the other kind of piece of the growth and fixed mindset is how students conceive of intelligence. So if they're operating under the assumptions that intelligence is inborn, then it's not a mutable, changeable property, right? They can't change it. If they believe I'm bad at math because I was born with a defective math gene, my mother was always bad at math, so I inherited that. So there's no point in me working hard because I'm not going to be able to change or mutate that gene, as opposed to the growth mindset where the conception of intelligence is through hard work and effort, I can augment my intelligence. And the research in the space is clear. In fact, my dissertation showed that student, and this is going back 30 years ago. So the reason that I have a long bio is because of longevity in the field, not, you know, that's why the bio is so long. But it showed that students who operate under a fixed mindset are less likely to A, utilize the study strategies that you teach to them, and B, they're less likely to seek out help if they get stuck. So I really like to, there are lots of quick and dirty tools on conceptions of intelligence and growth mindset. So talk to students about that, maybe even have them do a little debate in class about where intelligence comes from, but dispel that myth of intelligence. Because some of my research has also showed that if we can shift students' conception of intelligence and move them more toward a growth mindset, the higher their grade point average is likely to be. And when students hear that, they seem to be a little bit more open to embracing this idea that if I change the way that I think about it, maybe it will improve my outcomes.
Right.
Yeah. And right. I'm gonna piggyback one more thing. One thing that is, Lori suggested that I do this semester, and you can tailor this for motivation in particular, which she said, Amy, have them write an academic autobiography. Ask them to reflect on how they were a student or how they were a learner before they came to college. Incredibly genius assignment, incredibly insightful in terms of understanding what kinds of experiences they had in the past and how difficult those were sometimes. But also I asked them who helped you with the learning process. And you can tweak that to ask how are you best motivated to learn? And you don't have to do it in an essay like I did. You could ask it in a questionnaire at the beginning of a semester or in the middle of the semester kind of thing. If you are really wanting to get at what is it, what's causing student motivation or demotivation? Is it past experiences? Is it a fixed mindset about certain things? Or is it something else? And using that data to kind of, talk through, aggregate data to talk in class or to specifically reach out to students who are struggling. So thank you, Lori, for that. Great idea.
I really, really love this idea. I have my students kind of write a letter to me as we wrap up our class, right? Mm-hmm. But I love this idea of starting off, which kind of gets at some of this academic autobiography, but how powerful would it be to have that as a data point to begin mm-hmm. our conversations with in class? Because I know every semester I have to remind myself, I teach a lot of people who don't really identify as being students, even though they're in a college setting, right? That's not, if you ask them, tell me the top 10 things about you, student mm-hmm. wouldn't even be on that list. And it's not a place they feel very comfortable. I'm wondering too, and I love that you brought up this strategy, improving the self-talk. I feel like while that might be hard to do, perhaps in like a math class, I don't know. I don't teach math. It scares me. But
you can do it in math class, but go ahead.
But are there some things you and Lori, you've tried with students, short exercises or anything that can kind of help get at that?
I think, there's positive self-talk and negative self-talk. And then we talk to students about switching cognitive gears or reframing, cognitive restructuring. What I found is powerful and tends to resonate with students, especially if you've got students who have been athletes in your class, is that a lot of that, there's so much research in sports psychology on self-talk that shows that it has a powerful influence over performance, and the students really like bringing the sport psych concepts into it. I think that's one way to approach it when you can have them identify with an athlete or something they admire. And there's a good chance that person has a sports psychologist and you're using some of these strategies. They've had some of these strategies and they've worked for athletic performance. They can work for academic performance.
Yeah. I would piggyback on that to say, I've been thinking about the students that I, you know, have identified as seeming as unmotivated, or they've shared that with me. I think the self-talk piece and coaching them on how to be kind to themselves and be encouraging is really helpful. I also will reach out to students who seem disengaged to some degree and find out what's going on with them, perhaps, or what are they interested in? What is their long-term goal? It kind of gets to that AMP metaphor that, or the acronym that Lori talked about, that sense of purpose. Why are you here? And what is it that is your long-term goal? And then if I can then find ways to connect with them in that way and say, what we're doing in class is really important for you. I have a student who she's chosen oftentimes to disengage from the work in the class and out of the class. She's a biochem major and she has very lofty goals of going on to graduate school. So I try to find things that would connect with her. And we'll say it in class, hey, you're a biochem major. This particular thing we're talking about today is an excellent opportunity for you. And, you know, yes, I'm singling that person out, but it also benefits other students who can then go, oh, well, I've got a major and maybe I can find something that will connect with me as well. It's a little more labor intensive to do that kind of one-on-one with students, but can be really, really helpful for those that are really suffering from that lack of motivation.
The other thing that I've done as a fun exercise in class related to the cognitive restructuring is I'll say to students, complain to me, whine and complain to me. And then we get their musings on the board and we write them down. And then I'll say, okay, let's take this musing or how you're making sense of your experience and let's restructure it. What could you say differently? That's coming from a more positive perspective and work on as a class, reframing and restructuring. And that, I mean, I feel like that's an assignment they get a kick out of because they welcome the complaining and me getting the sentences on the board. And then
you're brave, Lori. But that, you know, another tweak on that too, kind of bouncing off of the thing that I talked about with that particular student is if you are unmotivated, and I have students who are unmotivated for particular courses, they're unmotivated for particular assignments. And I'll go back to that purpose. Why are you here? What are you doing? How can this assignment, this course help you with that, with a skill related to your long-term goal? And so sometimes that reframing again, I know you don't like writing papers, and I know you don't like researching anything that is not something you are personally interested in, but let's talk about what skills are embedded in that and how those are basically professional skills that you can then take into the workplace with you, being able to, you know, do something that you really want to do with that. So it kind of gets back to that purpose thing.
That purpose, which I mean, and what I know of, you know, teaching students of all ages, right? Adult learners also really want to understand the purpose of what, you know, I'm happy to do the work, but I need to understand how this is fitting into this bigger picture of this direction that I'm moving. And Amy, I think the both of you actually have posted some things recently about this idea of finding purpose, helping students to identify the why. We talk a lot about that in my class. We're going to write it down. We're going to illustrate it, because on those days where you don't want, when you are not feeling motivated, you know, in a simple example, the person, the student in my own home who I love and adore, and, you know, when he's like, I'm not feeling motivated to do work. Well, what's your goal? Well, I really want to go to Virginia Tech. Okay. So we're going to hang above your desk. Thank God for, because of your dad, we have a lot of that paraphernalia, right? And it's a visual reminder of, I don't want to do my work, but oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
I have, that's my why right now.
Yeah.
I also think so many students are, and we know that there's and Amy and I were talking about this in our meeting before the meeting, what, you know, what's the purpose of a college education and what kinds of skills and habits is it meant to cultivate in human beings? And the students' main focus is that it gets them a job, right? So of late, one of the things, and this came out in 2022, the World Economic Forum has a list of 12 skills, I think it is, that employers are looking for in 21st century employees. Mm-hmm. So I pop that up on my board and I say, this is what we're doing today, and here's what employers are looking for. And it's all of those habits of mind and thinking skills, right? Like critical thinking and effective communication and the ability to do group work. So I think finding something like that to ground your lessons in, that you can, Amy was talking about at her institution, they have four pillars of the philosophy of their education that they can utilize to connect mm-hmm. back to. So I think those grounding things mm-hmm. are really helpful.
Yeah. And I'm going to add another thing. I know we're peppering with a lot of different ideas. I hope this is really helpful. You know, cause I think, you know, we all have moments where we find something that works, but all that goal setting, and I know Lori's background is in these kinds of principles in terms of psychological principles, but the goal setting pieces that I share with students where they have to anticipate a setback and then talk through how to get through it. So, you know, every student I have wants to earn a 3.0 by the end of the semester or higher. And so I have them identify what are those barriers that they might encounter during the semester, and then share with me what strategies they're going to use to get over that barrier. And then I sometimes even add, what kind of resources are available on campus that can help you with that as well? And I know Lori knows this psychological principle, and she'll probably share it with you as soon as I shut up. But it is the idea of anticipating, you know, what difficulties or demotivators are in front of us, and then what strategies do we know will work, can have a lot of benefit for students, even if they never, you know, encounter that setback. So Lori, are you chomping at the bit to say what that is?
No. Well, again, like I said, I think it's important to take a psychoeducational approach with students, because if you can ground it in research for them and share that with them. So you're talking about anticipatory problem solving.
There you go. That's right? What I was waiting for you to say.
Yep. So anticipatory problem solving. And then if we go back to that attributional theory of achievement motivation, that barriers come from internal and external. So, you know, that chart that I shared with you, Amy, that has students look at, here's 10 internal barriers that you might be facing that are creating challenges, and here's 10 or so external barriers, and, you know, put those up on the board and have students take a look at them and say, are these things happening for me? And that's a chart, Meg, that we can probably share, or you've probably got that somewhere in the archives at Innovative Educators, that internal and external barrier chart that I have.
That's great. And I did use that in class. I also asked them, I did a QR code and I did a little survey and asked them to identify what are the most prevalent barriers to their motivation. And we had a lively conversation around what to do about that. And it's a great way to normalize it. You know, that's something, Meg, we haven't shared yet. We were normalizing our own personal experience with unmotivated students, but I do think normalizing a lack of motivation for students in general is important, to say it happens to all of us. Not every college student is excited when they wake up to go to class and learn and do, you know, we have moments of, oh my gosh, just get your shoes on, get out of the room and head over there. I think that's a helpful piece too.
Yeah.
That fake it till you make it, right? Sometimes you just don't want to do something, and you know, you got to exercise the behavior, even though, and I feel compelled to kind of like give that sort of definition of a healthy personality, right? Which is your behaviors, your attitudes, feelings and mindset have to be congruent, and sometimes they're not, right? Sometimes you don't feel like enacting the behavior of reading. Mm-hmm. And you have a negative attitude toward it, but you have to do your reading. So either the behavior comes first, you start doing the reading, and then the attitude and mindset and feelings follow, or vice versa, right? That's the perennial argument in personality psychology, but we're only propelled toward our goals if we can gain congruence. And I say to students, sometimes you got to fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
You got to run in order to do a marathon, even though you don't feel like it, right? You have to do your reading in order to prepare for a test. And they're unpleasant tasks, but sometimes we have to persevere through those unpleasant tasks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've spent 51 years faking that I like exercise. So I'm faking it. I haven't been making it yet. but I tell students the same thing, like, you know, are we motivated to brush our teeth? No, I mean, I don't get excited to unless I have a new toothbrush to whip that thing out. But it is part of my daily habit. It is part of the things that I do that I say are important to me. And my dentist says is important to me too. But, you know, with exercise, I am never motivated to go to the gym, but I just stick my shoes on. I put my cute clothes on. I stick myself in the car and I drive there. I never am disappointed when I'm done, but I can't say that I ever am excited to move my body at all. So, right. And sometimes sharing that with students to say, you don't have to be motivated to do some of these things. You just don't. Sometimes you just have to do them.
Do them. And again, normalizing this experience, right? Yes, you may have people who are like, oh, I love every class I've ever taken in college and every word that's ever come out of professor's mouth. But, and if we find any students like that, y'all let me know. But, you know, I think that you bring up such good points. We do have a couple of other questions that I want to make sure we get to. And some folks have chimed in. Dana has reminded us of the importance of having conversations around social capital. And I love this. So they know asking for help is cool. Because I think that is a huge piece that comes with life, right? I feel more motivated when I know that I'm in this environment where there are people supporting me and caring for my success.
Yep. Number one habit of mind, right? The ability to ask for help.
Right. We could have a whole podcast just on that, probably.
Yeah. And
When I've been thinking a lot about motivational techniques to meet the diverse needs and backgrounds of students in a college mm-hmm. setting, because in my very early career, I was in an open enrollment institution with a combination of adult learners and traditional learners. Then my mid-career for 25 years, I was with primarily traditional age students. And now I'm teaching again with non-traditional students. And I inherited a course that I just had to deliver the curriculum this semester. And I'm thinking about how it's set up, and probably not how I would have set it up, but I often think about how the structure of college courses actually in many ways sometimes can be demotivating for students mm-hmm. because I think about if we give students deadlines, for example, and they fail to meet those deadlines for a variety of reasons, a variety of barriers. And then that's it. And we don't give them a second chance to revise or do over or try again. Think about how incredibly unmotivating that is, right? How are you going to be enthusiastic and exciting if you got a punishment for having a challenge? Mm-hmm. So I have, particularly post-pandemic and with this course that I'm teaching now, I am being really flexible with these students about deadlines, because one student, for example, works the overnight shift, and her job and her lifestyle isn't meeting with these pre-prescribed deadlines that are set up on the syllabus. Well, mm-hmm. so what? Let's be flexible about the deadline, because that's going to keep her motivated to keep doing the work. Because if I shut the door and say this assignment is closed, then the student's going to throw their hands up. So I'm really an advocate of trying to, in as much as you can, to be flexible with those kinds of things with students, particularly mm-hmm. students who are working and have families, and you know, their work schedule might not match with the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, or whenever the system is set up. And so I'm just throwing that out there as for rethinking how we structure setting up deadlines, for example.
I have a little different approach, although I've been doing some incremental stuff that Lori had suggested, which is for some of my students, having a deadline is that external motivator that they need. And I always tell them, I don't care. You just turn something in. We can talk about the quality and figure out how to improve it later to no penalty, but I just need you to start the habit of getting stuff done, whether you're motivated or not, you know, just having that. It may be campus dependent on how you approach that.
Right. But then that goes back, I think, all of that to that autonomy piece, right? Like now I've got some autonomy and that can help with motivation. As we're thinking about this, any digital tools, and I do want to point, Amy and Lori did a brilliant webinar for us on distraction. So I do feel like I'm being hypocritical here and saying, and of those distracting, those little distractions, things that we all carry around called our phones, but any tools that you're like, oh, this app, this approach, this has really helped my students with motivation, with organization, I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm gonna jump in because Lori said it in our pre-meeting, and I want to take credit for it. But seriously though, I do teach this as well with students, and they identify that it does work. The Pomodoro technique, or if you can find it on an app, sometimes it's called the Tomato Timer because Pomodoro is Italian for tomato, and it's or you can just set a timer, which is what I do oftentimes whenever I'm not motivated to do something. 25 minutes. You just do the task. You do not worry about completing the task. You don't worry about how good it is. You just do. And then it'll go off. You can take a 5-minute break if you choose. And when I tell students to take a break, don't get on Instagram or TikTok because that will turn into 3 hours. And then if you decide to do 25 more, just keep setting it until you've done a cycle of, you know, a little over an hour or almost 2 hours. So sorry, Lori, I took credit for your.
Yeah. Well, I think because they have their phones in their hands all the times, or many of us do, using the timer on the phone can be effective. And in the psychology of procrastination workshop that I did, or it might've been one of your 2-minute takeaways talking about, and I love this concept because I do it myself, is circuit train your to-do list. So if you think of a gym where you're circuit training and you're like 10 minutes at the burpee station, 10 minutes doing push-ups, 10 minutes jogging in place, I'll look at my to-do list. And this is what I teach to students: pick something on your to-do list, do it for 10 minutes. And then when the timer's up, go to the next thing on your to-do list and do it for 10 minutes. And when the timer's up, go to the next thing on your to-do list. So you pick 3 or 4 things. And then eventually on one of your circuits, it's going to stick and you're going to be able to be on the 10 minutes and you're going to find focus and flow. And when that happens, stick with that item on your to-do list. So right. I think circuit training the to-do list is a good strategy.
Yeah. I'll add one more it's not necessarily app technology related, but somebody out there probably can create an app for it. Is the Eat the Frog method. And I know there's a lot of psychology behind why this is really helpful. It is taking that unpleasant task or the thing that you don't want to do, that you dread the most, and doing it the first thing, you know, first thing in the morning, usually, because that's when I have the most energy, but doing that first and then tackling the rest of the to-do list. I can't tell you how many students, and even someone last week, Sunday night, my son's girlfriend, actually, she had taken our student success class that I created and teach. She did not have me though. And she said one of the best things she learned in that class was Eat the Frog. She uses it all the time to get stuff done, and it helps with that motivation. I got the most unpleasant thing out, and now I feel more energized to do the things that are still on my list.
Yeah. We've had, just some wonderful comments in our chat about people popping in. Here's an app for Pomodoro. I think I accidentally opened it in the middle of our conversation. but we've had a good question. And this is one that I have just seen repeated across listservs. Carmen has shared that, you know, this feeling of we need to have grace and flexibility, right, in a post-COVID educational environment. But the bottom line is, how can faculty establish flexibility with some kind of boundaries so the kindness doesn't do more harm than good, right? If I don't have to turn in any assignments until the end of the semester, and that was my first graduate level statistics class, am I really going to be hitting benchmarks along the way to make sure that I'm learning? Am I really going to be absorbing the content in the course? So any advice? You're going to be solving probably one of the biggest problems in higher ed right now.
I'm going to tell you, I'm a little inflexible about some things. And so Lori can be my antidote here. But I have a 24-hour grace period on all outside of a class assignments, free of charge, no penalty, whatever. After that, it's a zero. Honestly, if they are at 12:01 a.m. within the 25th hour, I still grade it. But you can pick, you can be flexible, but pick and choose what you're flexible about. Mm. And Lori, you know, was coaching me on this for the spring. So what I did is, they had academic autobiography at the beginning of the semester. I had a bunch of people that didn't do it. And I said, for this one assignment, if you meet with me and talk through how to do it and make sure that you know how to do it and turn it in, I'll accept it late for this one thing. And that helped tremendously in order to kind of like show what my boundaries were, be responsive and flexible, you know, initially, and then help wean them off of that kind of, you know, I can just turn things in whenever I want to. Yeah, so right. you might not like that, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I do. I feel like if students share with me the reason why they were unable to do something on time, one student last week shared really, really poor behavior management and time management strategies. And I said, I'm willing to give you grace and flexibility on this assignment. You can do one or two things. You can watch the time and behavior management student lingo, print out the certificate of completion. And if you do that, I will allow you some grace and flexibility, or I want you to set up a Zoom with me and we'll talk through some strategies. So it's kind of give something to get something.
Right.
And I feel like as long as students will connect, engage, and talk with me so I can really be with them to help them, because it's other things that are getting in the way of not turning things in on time. They obviously want to do it. Something else is going on. So as long as they'll take my coach and counsel, then I'll give them grace and flexibility.
Yeah. And I've been toying with the idea of doing clinics next fall, where if you do miss a big chunk of assignments or something that's, you know, going to negatively impact your grade, that you have to come out, do a clinic with me. And it's kind of Lori's idea of come sit down and let's talk about how to organize and how to do a to-do list and that. I know that's going to be a lot of work on my end, perhaps, but it's that giving students the opportunity to then get the help that they need so that they can develop the skills.
Yeah. Well, and I think that speaks, sorry, Lori, really quickly, Crystal's made a great point about she has a life happened card that she allows, and once you get that one, but I do think, Amy, you're speaking to something. I don't think students have the skills. Like, I really do not. I mean, I am seeing this in the kids that I love and parent at my own house, right? The ability to take a large assignment and break it into chunks is not being taught, right? Like, there are these skills that we kind of perhaps assume. And I think this gets at that last question. Is there anything that maybe faculty and staff are assuming about motivation, right, that we need to kind of say, oh, and I think one of the things is an assumption that the students we're seeing are coming to us with the same skill set as they would have come to us 5 years ago. And it's not happening. I mean, and I say that with love for all the K-12 people that I, you know, doing that hard work. It's students are scoring differently. We know in math. I mean, so I just in reading comprehension, I think we have many years before we're going to see some sort of correction of that coming out of K-12. So I think, Amy, I'm going to be intrigued to see if you do these clinicals, you're going to have to come back and report on that. And Lori, one more thing, we've had some great ideas in our chat about doing a pop-up Eat the Frog event at campus each semester. And so Danielle has offered to share more information with us about that. So Lori, we've got a few minutes. Yeah. So last thought.
Yeah, well, as you were talking, I was reflecting on when we become experts at doing something, we often forget about the intermediate steps and the scaffolding that is needed. Mm-hmm. So, if you're teaching somebody how to drive a car, I've done this exercise with students. I say, what is the first step you need to know to drive a car? And students are like, put the key in the ignition. Well, first, if somebody's never seen a car before, you have to go down to the novice level. Like, what is the absolute novice level? They need to open the door first. So I think we, like you said, we make assumptions. Students might know what they have to do, but they don't necessarily know how to do it. And my students are working on a paper right now, and there used to be this, and Amy and I were searching for it. And if anyone knows where one is online, we were trying to find it. Assignment calculators. Oh, maybe that's the keyword that I didn't use, Amy, assignment calculator, where you could put a due date of a project in and the assignment calculator will break it down. I think the University of Michigan had one. It was called an assignment calculator. But I actually did this for my students with a paper. I took the 4 weeks and I said, day one, day two, day three, day four, you can take 2 days off this week. And I broke it down for them just so that they could see the exercise of how it's done.
Right.
I'm an expert at project management. I know how to do that, but I don't think students do. So if you can embed that into your courses, I think that's thinking about scaffolding and I'm an expert, they're novices. What does the novice need to know?
Yeah. And Amy's saying she calls that backdating. I would love to tell you all, and I've done this with my class, like ChatGPT will help a student here create a plan for me on how to write this paper. I have 2 weeks to do it. What should I do each day for the next 2 weeks? I think that's a whole other podcast. I think it's a lot going on there. That's exciting about how students are going to be able to use that to help kind of build some of this skill development, as you all are mentioning. Omar's just mentioned about Smarter Measure, which is a great tool, but there are a lot of different assessments. Some of them are paid, some of them are free out there that help students. And that's a great way to kick off an FYE course, right? To kind of take a moment to assess, where am I? Mm-hmm. What is my comfort level in asking for help? And what are some of my skill sets? I do want to, we are a few minutes over time, so I just want to thank everybody. Amy's put some additional comments in. Any last words here on student motivation? Because I feel like you're helping us solve a riddle that is being talked about a lot this year.
I love that. There's an old TED talk too called Every Student Needs a Champion. And I think if students know that, you're with them in this and you're here to help them and that you're their advocate, I think that goes a long way toward motivating students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amy, any thoughts? Final thoughts?
Lori did it fantastic. That empathy, that connection is going to be key to helping students with the motivation.
Yeah. Well, happy Friday, everybody. Melissa, we've had such a great chat today. Don't worry. If you're on the recording, we will email it to you, or this is available in GoToKnowledge. It's also available on all podcast channels, and we'll make sure that people who wanted to share information, we will work to make sure that all gets shared with you as well. So feel free to pass this episode on to other folks. If you would like to join us next month, May 17th, I will be talking with a couple of folks about basic needs insecurity and what the work that institutions are doing in a variety of different ways in different spaces to help address that. And boy, does that feed into, I think, the conversation we've had today, right? If our students are experiencing things like homelessness and food insecurity, we need to know that. So we can help address it so that they can continue to move on to be successful. So I'm excited to have that conversation too. So
those external barriers to student success, you just laid them out.
Right. I'm excited about that conversation and love how I feel like it really is connecting into the one we had today. Amy and Lori, it is always a pleasure wherever I am to get to listen and learn from the both of you. I've taken two pages of notes here in my mobile office and really thinking about, I get to go back on campus in the fall and be with students again. And those conversations that we're going to have, I'm looking at words like demotivators. What are things that do? Let's name these things, because then we can address it and we can create a plan for success for the semester and moving forward. So thank you all. I'm so grateful for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Yep. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope there's time for rest and renewal in your week ahead. Take care, guys. Thanks.
Friday Five Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.